How would you like to discover how clinicians can overcome burnout? And not only clinicians, how business people can overcome burnout. Helen Malinowski will tell us how to do this. And what's so special about Helen is she's the founder of the Somatic Integration Institute and creator of the Catalyst Collective. She helps clinicians build sustainable, nourishing practices that allow them to do meaningful work without burning out. So, Helen, most entrepreneurs are burned out. And how does someone not get to burnout? Follow me for more interviews with world's most innovative health change makers to live your healthiest life ever.
Oh, Lily, big question. I want to first off just say thank you so much for having me on. And for those of you guys listening out there, for everybody listening, if you have not already hopped on and given her a 5-star review on whatever channel you're listening on, go ahead and do that because that's how people find us, right? That's how people find you. So go out there, give her a review. Love to see that. How do people not get burnt out? I think is the million-dollar question. And then the second million-dollar question is, how do we recover from burnout? Right. So the first thing that I would say in terms of if I had a miracle answer to this, I would be an absolute millionaire right now. The first answer to that question is that we as entrepreneurs, we as helpers, many entrepreneurs are people who strive to help others. We are driven by something that's very deep in our core, and that is something that makes us, unfortunately, I think, vulnerable to burnout because our interests, our goals are pushing us all the time. And when we want to succeed and we want to see other people succeed, we are going to go above and beyond our own capacity. Oftentimes, we are going to ignore the signals that our body is giving us, the signals that our body is saying, you know, you've had too much, you've been working too hard, it's time to take a break. So this is something that I learned the hard way. I think many of us learn this the hard way. I'm a therapist. Do you think I would know what I should know about this? I didn't know much about burnout until I found myself sitting in my primary care's office in 2021, swinging my legs at that, silly little, table that they have when you're getting your blood pressure checked and everything. And he said to me, yeah, ask me questions. How are you sleeping? How are you, how are things going at home? It's a doctor I know very well. And he said to me, he's listening to my answers, and he said, Helen, he said, you're burnt out. And I looked at him and I just remember thinking, like, what does that even mean? Which is, in hindsight, I feel like, oh, but like so many of us don't know what it means until it hits us. So if you're listening and you are thinking, oh, what is this burnout thing? I'm hearing more and more about it, but what is this burnout thing? It is about being able to be present in your life, being able to be engaged and excited about the work that you do, and feeling as though what you're doing is meaningful. And when those things start to slip, when you start to question, is my work meaningful? When you start to question, is my health suffering? You might be facing burnout, and it becomes time to start to do something a little bit differently. And it's much more important to notice it early and do something about it if you can. And if you can't and you notice it late, that's okay also, because there's a lot of resources and supports out there to help basically recover your health and your mental health in your life.
Thank you. Can someone who feels like they're in the point where the straw is breaking the camel's back, where they're like at this point where they're so annoyed by the little things that happen in their business that they cannot take any little tiny extra thing? What is like a first step they can do right now to kind of alleviate that stress and go back to a feeling of I'm excited about doing this because this is my mission. I'm making such a massive difference, and I'm so excited to go to work, and everything is flowing and working, and I'm syncing with people, and I'm making a difference, and I'm making a contribution, and I'm really changing lives.
Exactly. What is it that you can do? So I would say the first thing, I think the hardest thing about burnout, And this is something that I have experienced. I think the hardest thing about burnout, if you're listening and this resonates, is that we don't, like I was saying earlier, we don't often catch ourselves until we're in it. We don't often notice that we're slipping down that slope until we get to a point where we're like, I just don't want to go to work tomorrow. Right? Like it's Sunday night and I'm thinking about my week and I'm thinking, would it be really nice to just take the day off tomorrow? It'd be really nice not to show up for something that usually we're excited to show up for. And it's easy to not notice that that's a problem. Do you know what I mean? Like it's very easy. The human brain is an enigma. The human brain can convince us that what we're feeling is just, it is what it is. And we should just kind of go with it. So I think the first step is noticing that what you're feeling and what you're thinking about and what you're reacting to is not your normal. That might come from the people that you know and love in your life. That might be something that comes from the outside where people say, you're not like your bubbly self. You're not showing up at the gym. Like I'm used to seeing you at the gym. I go to the gym often, right? I'm used to seeing you at the gym. You haven't been here in a week. Like what is going on? So that might be the first sign that you need to do something different. And that could be because you're experiencing fatigue. Like you're waking up in the morning, but you're not feeling rested. It could be because your muscles hurt. You know, you're so tense. You're so tight that your muscles hurt. Your stomach's not feeling good. Maybe you're getting sick more often. So these are signs and symptoms that something needs to change. And when we notice them, I think the first thing we need to do is give ourselves a little bit of grace. The first thing we need to do is say, you know, I have been working really hard. I am pushing myself beyond what I'm supposed to be pushing myself. I'm not sleeping well. I'm not eating well. I'm not taking good care of my body. And I'm not doing, and all those things are compounding. And so being able to say, yeah, like maybe putting your hand on your heart and saying, it's okay. I'm not the only person that's ever been here. And I know that there's a way out. Like if I can find the way out, I know that there's people that can help me. I know that I can help myself. I think that's the first step. And then the second step is taking a really honest look at how you're spending your time and what you're dedicating your time to. Unfortunately, one of the things that happens when we start to get burnt out is that everything starts to feel like a crisis. And we also, I think, stop. It's our nervous system response. It becomes this, things don't feel safe. Things don't feel secure. So I'm going to not necessarily trust that I can hand a project off to somebody. You know, maybe 5 months ago when I wasn't burnt out, I was feeling great. Like, oh, you know, this is your gig. This is your part of my business. I'm going to hand this off to you, or I'm going to hire a contractor, or I'm going to ask someone for help in this area. But because I'm so stressed and so tense and nothing feels safe, now I'm just going to try to do it myself because I don't have the energy or the capacity or the bandwidth to explain this to somebody else and to trust that somebody else is going to do this correctly. So recognizing that my stress level is actually exacerbating the issue is an important piece of it. Looking at your support system, community. What does your community look like? Who are your people? Who can you lean on? What does your team look like? Those are all important questions because those are the people that when you are at the edge, those are the people who are going to help you step back. Those are the people that you can lean on if you so choose. Another piece is starting to really tune into what does your routine look like. And I say this knowing also that when we're burnt out, when we're overwhelmed, when we're stressed out, saying like setting up a rigid routine is not the answer. But knowing what your routine is helpful. Am I snoozing my alarm? Am I waking up too early because I think that I'm going to get more done if I wake up at, you know, am I staying up too late? What am I doing before I go to bed? Am I scrolling on my phone? Am I having a glass of wine? How is that affecting my sleep? So bringing awareness, and the way we bring awareness, I'm a somatic therapist, and that means tuning into your body. That means connecting the mind with the body. So by doing that, you can start to recognize patterns. You can start to recognize, well, this affects this. When I stay up because I'm a mom, Lily, I've got two little kids, I got a husband, I got a dog. There is a point at the night where I'm done. And then finally everybody goes to bed, right? And you know how that is. It's like, oh, The house just got really, you smiling. The house just got really quiet. It's like, oh, what can I do right now? I haven't had quiet all day. Since the moment I've woken up, people have been asking me for things. I've been answering questions. I've been showing up for stuff. Now it's like 9 o'clock at night, 10 o'clock at night. Nobody wants anything. I should probably go to bed. Do I go to bed? No. Do you go to bed? No. Yeah, so recognizing, but I'm getting something out of that time, but is it what I really need? And should I figure out how to maybe carve that piece into a different part of my day? Right. I had an assistant. I recently hired an assistant because I recognized I was falling into this pattern again of like doing, 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 like checking my email all the time, not trusting that people were going to do what they were going to be doing. And I was like, I need someone to help me with this. Like, I need someone that I can lean on, that I can trust. And I found this wonderful woman, and she's, been with me for a couple of months now. And she said to me, like, very early on, she looked at my schedule and she said, Helen, you don't even have lunch in your calendar. Like, you don't have a lunch break in your day. It's like, well, why do I need a lunch break in my day? I'm not like a big lunch person. I can have a quick sandwich. It takes me 5 minutes. And she's like, that's not the point, Helen. You need to shut your day down, even if it's for 15 minutes, 20 minutes, a half an hour. And she insisted I put a half an hour lunch in my schedule. And so now I have a half an hour lunch in my schedule every single day. And what I noticed from that is the difference that it made at the end of my day. Just taking that half hour, 20 minutes, whatever it might be, even if it's just standing outside, going for a walk, having a cup of coffee, saying hi to someone, like a neighbor if I'm at home, or someone in the office if I'm in the office, having a quick conversation that's not work related, that's just, fun. It's a huge difference. And at the end of the day, I'm not feeling like I need now that half hour to myself because I've already gotten it. So, I mean, those are just the beginning. It's just the beginning.
Tell us what drew you to supporting clinicians around burnout sustainability and somatic practice.
Right. So, how do I support them? Oh, my goodness. It's a constant conversation, I think, around very similar to what we're just talking about right now is what's happening in your practice? What does your day look like? How do you feel at the end of the day? How do you feel about the work that you're doing? We have these really lovely coaching pods that we run. Almost, I think I've got one every single week. It's a bunch of different groups. And we sit there and we talk about, how are things going in our practices? What is it that's working? What do I feel good about? And not just in my practice, but how does it then translate into my home life? What am I bringing home at the end of the day? What am I able to leave at work? One of the things that I try to do often is I try to think like, what am I carrying and what can I shed? Right. So I'll do sort of this, oh, what am I carrying? What can I shed? Kind of like a shaking off of my day and of what I'm, sorry, got warm in here, of my day and what I'm carrying. How do I get rid of what is not mine? How do I identify my stuff and separate that from my client's stuff and not carry it home? This is something that coaches experience, physical therapists experience, psychiatrists, psychologists, therapists, we all experience that. We're talking to people all day long and they're telling us stories, and they're especially in the trauma world, and there's so much out there right now that's trauma. We're talking about things that are really heavy. Quite honestly, Lily, the world is heavy. So we're talking about things that are heavy. We live in a heavy world and we have to make a decision. At some point, am I acknowledging what's mine and acknowledging what's not mine, and then making a choice to set aside what's not mine? And how am I doing that? Am I doing that through writing? Am I doing that through meditation? Am I doing that through supervision, consultation, having conversations with other clinicians and other practitioners, with a coach, with a business partner, with a friend or a family member? But like very intentionally, like not living in isolation in our work, living in community, existing in community, working in community.
Thank you. I think a lot of the reasons why burnout exists is because I think we assume that there are certain things only we can do. And the reality is so different, especially in the age of AI. So, for a long time, I would say for, I don't know, at least 7 years, I thought that I had to check certain things that my team was doing. And then I realized actually I could have one of them check what the others were doing. And now it's saving me at least 20 hours a week of my work. Okay. And I would say I used to work every day without a break. And I'm a dancer, I'm a sports person, like I'm a sporty person. Okay. I like to walk. And before I started doing what I'm doing now, I used to work as a nanny, like, 14 years ago, I was a nanny and I was getting so much exercise in, like taking the kids to school, bringing them back. I was a housekeeper as well, ironing, cleaning a house of four floors in like 3 hours. And so, like, so much exercise was going in. And also, I was playing tennis and squash and dancing 18 hours a week and swimming 3 times a week. So like going from that to a relatively not so much sedentary life, because I moved into like property management and I was doing a lot of viewings and I was carrying a backpack of 10 kilos every day with a lot of keys and contracts and card machine for taking payments and so on the go. But it was a lot more sedentary than before. And then because I stopped kind of like dancing, I stopped swimming, I put on 30 kilos and I was definitely at some point burnt out to the point that I don't think I ever returned to that level of pre-burnout. But what I realized is first, there are a lot of things that can be delegated, even the ones that you think only you can do. The second thing is that I noticed that removing the fun things that I used to do, like the swimming and the dancing on a regular basis, it was like my biggest mistake, because I think that had I left them in, like had I done them even like for 1 hour a day before work, it's kind of like it gives you that boost and that motivation, that drive and that dopamine hit where you can continue working endless hours because you're pumped, you know? And because I stopped doing that, I kind of like removed a lot of the energy and the fuel that I needed in order to continue. But you can say that the thing that the burnout taught me was that I don't have to do everything, and but it's important to bring in back the happiness, the joy, the things that kind of the moments that kind of give you that excitement. And I think every woman or every man ha you know, everybody has something that they feel really excited about that gives them joy. And some of them are static activities, like maybe like having your coffee on top of a hill or looking at a lake or, like sitting in the park quietly. Especially if you are always in a chaotic home where you have like 3 to 5 children and you're like always answering questions, always helping others. You don't have time and peace for yourself. I think that kind of thing can be like a really joyful moment to be like for half an hour in a park. And then there's also activities or exercise or things that you love to do that if you could just like do them with people, that could give you a lot of joy as well. So what's your opinion in terms of like someone who actually wants to replace burnout with a sustainable practice in terms of like streamlining a lot of the activities that can be done and introducing a lot more fun?
Lily, it's so interesting that you say this. I'm a very active person as well. I'm very active. Gosh, I don't know how many years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, I used to run a lot. And I was like, during COVID, it was like, I got to get out of the house because I have little kids. It was my opportunity to just go and like clear my brain and not be like inundated with stuff all the time. And about 3 or 4 years ago, it was like the fall and it was getting really dark. It's New England. The sun starts to rise. We hit daylight savings. I would run in the morning before the kids went to school. And I'm like, I don't want to go out in the morning. It's dark. It's scary, right? Like someone's going to snatch me up in a van. I don't know what I was thinking, but I got really nervous. And so I reached out to a bunch of my friends who are other moms. And I said, do you guys want to go for a run with me? Like, would you like to like meet up on a Thursday morning before school and go for a run? And so for the next 2 years, we met every Thursday morning, this group of women, to go for a run. Sometimes we walked, mostly we ran. And so I'm a therapist. We had moms, we had coaches, we had business ladies. And there was a point at which we said, we don't even need therapists anymore. We don't need coaches. Like, we've got our whole thing here, right? giving each other advice. We're like talking about the problems that we have in our lives. We're trying to like figure out how to be the best parent that we can be. We're trying to like work on work issues. And we're also running or walking and being outdoors and watching the sunrise. And it's amazing. It's amazing. It kind of dissipated because we've sort of figured out we didn't need to do it on a particular morning. We could go any morning of the week. And so now we just have a big group and we're like, what are you doing? Are you going to yoga? Are you going to the, you know, boot camp workout? Are you going for a run? Are you going for a walk? And multiple times a week, we connect with one another in a space where we're like improving ourselves, being good friends, and being physically active. If it's not for everybody, for some people, the answer might be that, but they're doing pottery, that, but they're doing theater, right? So people are going to have like their different things. But I think that this idea of figuring out like, what is your thing? What do you love to do? What fulfills you? And then how do you do it with other people? Because we're humans and we're social creatures and we do better when we're with others who are like-minded, who are supportive, who are encouraging. Like it really, it flows into all the areas of our life and it improves how, for me, my experience is that it improved how I was as a parent, improved how I showed up as a partner, it improved, you know, how I showed up as a clinician, as a business owner, as an employer. Just it improved all areas of my life, having supportive women around me who saw me and could reflect back to me, you know, what I needed to hear to both be uplifted and improve who I am as a person. So yeah, don't give up on the things that bring you joy, Lily. Go dance.
Thank you. So one thing, because I'm single at the moment and I don't have children. Okay. So what I do now is that I dance a lot, looking at myself in the mirror, and I just really feel the music and it gives me so much joy. I feel like I'm drunk sometimes just from the music. Like I really feel the music, you know, and I feel almost like I'm pumped with electricity just from feeling the music. But I think every person has something that pumps them with energy. And tell us more about how a somatic practice can actually release this kind of like energy we all have deep inside. And what does that somatic practice entail? How can someone leverage that to get more energy and you can say even find solutions for burnout? Because I think that when you're in this burnout cycle, it's almost like you feel a little bit like a rat on the wheel, and you it's almost like you're doing the same activities and you don't see the woods for the trees. But when you have energy, it's like, oh, I have the solution. Oh, I can get the cleaner to kind of, you know, do my cleaning stuff. I can get the, I don't know, the gardener to do whatever stuff. I can get the AI to sort out my note taking. And so there's a lot of things that kind of come to you when you release negative energy and when you clear your head. But if you don't clear your head because you're like always occupied, it's like you don't find the solutions for burnout. So tell us how a somatic practice can help with that.
Absolutely. So I think one of the things that happens when we're really overwhelmed is we go into a state of what you might call, it's like a version of shutdown. So a freeze, you kind of go into a freeze, right? And the freeze is when you have so much happening under the surface, so much stress, so much like buzzing energy that it exceeds the capacity of your system to carry it. And it's like the brakes get slammed on. Right? It's like the brakes get slammed on. And you know that feeling of like suddenly being like, I can't move or I can't think or everything feels like so overwhelming. So that state of freeze, there's a lot of different ways to work through it. But from a somatic practice, starting to recognize what's happening in your body, starting to be able to, you're a dancer. So you probably have like the most beautiful degree of proprioception and interception and awareness of what's happening in your body, right? So like you do something with your arm, right? And you feel that. You can feel what happens with that movement. As you do something that's like movement related, where else do I notice that? Right? Where else do I notice that? If I stretch, right? If you leaned your arms up and you stretch left and you stretch right, where else am I noticing that in my body? Where else am I feeling a release or an expansion in my body? and paying attention to how those shifts, like what impacts shifts in your body, is the gateway to starting to create more space for all the things that are happening in your life. I like to, on a day-to-day basis, like on a very minuscule, I call them like just micro movements to bring in. If I'm sitting here and I'm talking to you, I could sit very still and my body's going to get more and more stressed and my breath is going to get more and more constricted. But I could also sit here and I could have a little bit of movement, right? I could like move my toes. I could move my hands. I could rock a little bit of my chair. And even with those just little movements, as I notice them, that brings a little bit more expansion. It brings a little bit more openness. So somatics, connecting with what our body is telling us, what are the messages that we're being sent? Our external environment is always coming in, right? But we don't often take that mirror and say, well, now what is my internal environment telling us, telling me? And how do I then respond to my internal environment to make more room, to make a choice that says, oh, I can take a breath here. I don't need to hold my breath. I can move my body. I don't need to be stuck or still. Somatic experiencing specifically is really a trauma type of treatment. And it's a beautiful treatment when you're carrying, experiences that are stuck in your body. And to some degree, we all have some of trauma or experience that gets stuck in our body, but we don't have to necessarily identify as having trauma to benefit from this. It can be integrated into yoga, Pilates, meditation, mindfulness, massage, you know, therapy, all different kinds of ways that we take care of our bodies and our minds.
So, for example, if you knew that I have a sore throat, and most likely kind of connected to trauma of being in childhood, how would you release that? And what impact would it have if I used a somatic practice to release it?
Well, it would very much depend on the somatic practice. I would say, first off, I want to be a little bit cautious to say that without having a licensed and trained practitioner to work with, I would say these are generally things that, particularly if you know they're connected to like a thing that's happened in your life, work on it with someone who knows what they're doing. Stuckness in our throat can be anything from, you know, not having had a voice. So things that might open up your voice could be really helpful. It could be related to something physical that's happened to you, which might require, you know, it might be like boundaries, working with our boundaries, working with like creating space and creating safety. It could be, so kind of knowing where it comes from is really important. And then working with someone who has the training, has the sort of scope of practice, as we say in my field, to work on that is really important. At a very basic level, I would say connecting to your sense of safety in this moment is a starting place. So like right now, Lily, I'm in a room and I can look around and you're in your room and you can look around and there's nobody else in here, right? There's nobody outside the windows. I can see outside the windows. It's a sunny day. I can look around and I can let my body, my nervous system sense that right now, there's nothing for me to be afraid of. There is nothing that I'm at risk of. There's no one here who's going to harm me. I am safe. And doing that very intentionally and allowing your body to feel and then connecting into the feeling of what that is can start this really profound process of saying, oh, I can sit a little bit more quietly. I can relax my neck a little bit because I don't have to be tuned into what's happening behind me because I just looked. There's nobody there behind me. I'm safe. So that would be a starting place. But definitely, if you have something that is connected to a trauma, if you have something that is, you know, really showing up again and again and again, I would always recommend find someone who's trained in this to work on it with you so that you have guidance, you have support, you have someone who has been there before and understands how to kind of lead you through it.
Thank you. How can someone overcome your inability to have boundaries that lead to burnout? So let's say I'm a people pleaser. I don't have any boundaries and I tend to overextend myself to try to please. And that has led in the past to burnout. And because of this burnout, I shut down for a long time and I went into depression and freezing. And then I'm kind of like defrosting at the moment.
You're defrosting, you're reconnecting with the world, but you want to reconnect in the world in a way that has, like, you have some space, right? You have some separation. You're able to say no and feel okay in saying no, right? Again, many of these things I recommend working through with somebody. Like, don't try to do it on your, don't ever try to do this kind of stuff on your own. But if you're feeling like, for example, if you are being asked something, asked to do something, or from a business perspective, one of the things that pops into my head frequently around this, and this happens to me, it still happens to me, and I've worked a lot on this, is I'm hiring someone and they're asking for a certain pay rate. Or they've come to me, they've been working with me for a while, and they're looking for a raise or a change in a position, right? So the people and pleaser in me wants to say, yes, let's offer you that. That's beautiful. I love that. That's great. The business person in me says that actually doesn't, those numbers don't work. So I have to, like, reconcile this part of me that says the numbers don't work with a part of me that says, but I don't want this person to be mad at me because I want them to, I want them to be happy and I don't want them to leave. And so one of the things that I will do personally, and I would love to hear if people are listening to this, when people listen to this, if they want to, like, comment and, like, give their own experiences, I would like to read what other people do with this. But one of the things that I do personally is I notice what happens when, for example, that person comes to me, I read that email and it says, I want to talk about a raise. So what's happening in my body, right? What do I notice? Do I notice a pit in my stomach? Do I notice a tightness in my chest? Do I notice, like, a flushing in my face? And then when I think of what my answer is, can I say yes? Do I need to say no? Do I need to offer another? Then what happens with that? Is there a shift? Is there more tightness in my jaw? Is there more constriction in my chest? I think about making that appointment with this person and having that conversation, and oh my gosh, all of a sudden I can't breathe, right? So the first step in everything is noticing. It's really tuning in and noticing and slowing down. I worked in recovery, in the recovery world, for a very long time, and we often talked about the space between the trigger, for lack of a better word, the trigger and the response. So you have the trigger reaction. It's fine. We're all going to have our reactions. We're all going to have that thing that happens immediately. But it's like, how do I create space between that trigger and the moment I respond? And what do I do in that space? So for boundaries, for saying no, you can practice saying no. You can practice saying no to a mirror. You can practice saying no into a video. You can practice saying no to a friend who understands that you can say no to them, and it's just practice. You can practice, you can do things like pushing. This is a pretty basic somatic exercise, but it's this idea of, I can take my hands, I can push them into the chair and kind of just exert some effort, or I can push them into the table in front of me and I can exert some effort. If you're listening, you're welcome to try this. I'd love that. Just give a little bit of a push and hold it. You can feel, the muscles engaging in your chest and in your shoulders and in your abs. And then you can let it go. And just notice if there's any shifts as those muscles release. And then how that might change if you go back to the thought, back to the decision, what changes, like, in terms of your reactions to that thought or the decision, as you allow your muscles to experience no. This is no, right? You put your hands up, that's no. So when your muscles experience no, how does that change how your brain experiences no?
Thank you. So tell us though, for example, for the example that I gave about the sore throat and give us an example of a somatic practice that someone could put in place. I understand
Yes.
you suggest that people should work directly with a practitioner, but give us an example what somatic practice looks like for someone who might
Sure.
want to deal with trauma and the trauma that is leading them to people please and to burnout. Is it that they would do some body movements, some shaking, or is it like an individual thing based on the kind of trauma that they have and where it's stored in the body?
Well, I think both of those things. Right. So we all have our own experiences. They're stored in our body, and our bodies are all different. So you and I could have had the same experience. It can be stored in the same space, and what works for me might not work for you, right? So we could also have different things. That being said, vocalizations can be really helpful with our voice and with our throat. So it could be anything from like like we do, there's this voo sound that Peter Levine does. That's a voo that like vibrates all the way up your, it could be or like, if there's anger, if there's like aggression in there, it could be more of a growl sound, like a kind of a growl that needs to come out. Sometimes it's simply supporting that space, right? So it could be like a hands-on, you know, actual support of the throat and the neck. Some people don't like that. Some people don't like being touched in the neck, right? But some people, this idea of being held and being contained and maybe even being like kind of gently massaged can be very supportive and very like opening for them. So it very much depends on the person. And I would, you know, what I would say for this kind of exercise is, and maybe reach out to me and find me. I mean, I would love to have like a deeper conversation if there was a person who's specifically kind of struggling with something like this about where it came from and what they've tried in the past and how that's worked out and maybe like where they're trying to go and then figuring out a game plan and some strategies. When it comes to practitioners and it comes to the Catalyst Collective, we are looking very much at like how does burnout show up in your life and how does burnout show up in your work and in your business. And because we're working all together, we show up, you know, we work as a group. We're talking about these things and we're practicing exercises that might work. And we're giving each other feedback. Oh, I was working on this last week and this stuff came up when I was working on it. And I would love to have a conversation with you about it rather than like letting it sit and letting it kind of stew. There's a space to let it out. I definitely have some hesitation around some of the, not that I'm opposed to shaking stuff. I'm not opposed to shaking stuff. I think that it does work, but I have hesitation around some of the Insta therapies that are out there that people are doing without the guidance of a clinician, without being able to be in presence with someone. I have seen people who are looking for a quick fix, who are looking for I need to move this through my system. And they do something and then they come back to therapy and it's like, whew, sure, things have been opened, but it's not opened in a good way. It's opened in a way that now we need to contain. One of the like critical considerations when you're doing somatic work, particularly when you're working in the field of trauma, comes because we've had too much, too soon, and too fast. And so we don't want to repeat that. We want to take little bits at the right time in a very slow way. And so that is best done when you have support and when you have guidance, because it can be so compelling to see this thing. I'm going to go do this because this looks like it's the answer. And sometimes it's another thing that's too much, too fast, too soon.
Thank you. What are the main causes of burnout? Because I think in my case, I would say the inability to say no is one. The second mm-hmm. one is perfectionism. And the third one is almost like you get a lot of significance from, you know, like I did this versus, you know, like other people did this. So it kind of like boosts you up, like makes you feel sort of like important. That's like the payoff. So I think there's like a payoff in the burnout that people don't expect. Mm-hmm. So what would you say are like the main causes of burnout? How do you treat it based on the different causes?
Right. That's so interesting. So there's, I would say one of the main causes is being a high achiever. If you're a person who enjoys working hard, who enjoys seeing success, who enjoys helping other people, who enjoys like seeing the results of their effort, you're at an increased risk for burnout because at some level you enjoy working. There's a part of you that enjoys working at that pace, that enjoys working at that pace. So I think that that is a significant contributor to burnout. And that's a hard one to combat because we think about, like, let's pursue the things that bring us joy. And when I sit back and I say, well, my work brings me joy. Okay, that's great. But my work is also contributing to my burnout. So what can I do differently in my work that so I can allow it to continue to bring me joy, or like identify the things about my work that are bringing me joy and find that in other areas. So as a helper, one of the things that brings me joy about my work is seeing how other people are thriving. So maybe there's another place where I can see that. Maybe there's another area in my life where I can see that. Think about like parenting. I mean, parents get burnt out. Why do parents get burnt out? Because they want, so they so enjoy seeing their families thrive, seeing their children thrive, seeing their household thrive, but that can become too much. So is there another place where I can put my time and my energy, where I can see that outcome, but not necessarily deplete myself in the process? So I think that that's a big contributor to burnout, is this like, and then I would say another one is maybe, I don't really want to use the word addiction, but a kind of compulsion to be on the go, like a difficulty stopping, a difficulty being able to say, it's okay for me to be quiet. It's okay for me to sit still. And that I think is a phenomenon that can come from trauma. It can come from something like ADHD. I think ADHD is a contributor to burnout because of how just the brain works. It has a hard time stopping. It has a hard time slowing down. It just like go, 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 go. But yeah, so I think that anyone who's like on the go, who really thrives from seeing success in others, who is, those are high risk situations. And it's a matter of looking at where else can I achieve the same sense of satisfaction? Like, how else can I achieve this feeling of accomplishment or joy or satisfaction or like purpose in my life that allows me also to take a breath so that I don't have to quit? I mean, that's the most heartbreaking thing for me, when people are facing burnout and they decide they don't want to do what they love doing anymore. It's like, oh my gosh, don't stop doing what you love doing. Like, the world is at a loss as a result. So let's figure out how you can continue to do what you love. And if you no longer love it for like real reasons, not just because you're burnt out, but you no longer love it anymore, let's find something else that you love. Because it's important to have passion. It's important to be excited about things. It's important to want to wake up in the morning and go and do like the thing that is your thing. And that loss of meaning, that loss of purpose, that like exhaustion, that part of burnout, that's like heartbreaking when I see it happen. And I am so like encouraged when I see people show up and work on it and get better and like rejoin the world in a way that feels like empowering and authentic and joyful.
Thank you. Tell us how would someone overcome burnout and the feelings, the emotions that kind of come from burnout. So perhaps you might experience guilt, resentment, anger, sadness, disappointment as well, because you know, like when you are a high achiever and then you've reached a point where you feel like you can't do anymore, it can feel a little bit like you're running 100 fences and you're stopping at the 99th one because you can't do one more. And for someone who is a winner, they cannot cope with losing. They have to win, and winning means doing what they've always done. So like, how does someone deal with those emotions and overcome the emotions that come from burnout?
Well, I think that there's talking to people about it, that's really helpful. But I think a lot of what's burnout is actually a really physical experience. It shows up in an emotional way. I mean, it also shows up questioning what we're doing, not enjoying our work anymore, feeling like we're not being effective. Do I have a purpose for this? So it shows up that way. But I think the way, my experience is that the way to combat that is to really take a look at like, what am I doing with my time? Who am I surrounding myself with? Can I, for example, connect with other colleagues who are experiencing similar issues to explore what they're doing? Do I feel isolated? Am I scheduling time in my schedule, like do I miss scheduling personal time? Am I actually making an effort to take care of me outside of what I do for work? Who am I surrounding myself with? So I'm going to go back to this, right? Because I said like putting yourself around people who are maybe struggling in a similar way can be really helpful. And putting yourself around colleagues to consult with can be really helpful. But also paying attention to, am I surrounded by negativity and cynicism? Like, am I walking into, for those who, for example, maybe work in an office, am I going into the break room and people are just like, I don't know what I can say on this show right now, but are people complaining about their job? Am I surrounded by people who are complaining about their job, or am I surrounded by people who are excited about what they do? And if I am surrounded by people who are complaining, is that a space that I want to continue to show up in, or do I show up in a different space? Right. So that's an idea. I would say looking for feedback. If you don't have, you know, entrepreneurs typically tend to be a little bit more, I don't want to say isolated because I don't think we're necessarily isolated, but I think that we don't have a built-in supervision mentorship structure in the way that some industries do. And we have to seek that out, right? We have to actively find a coach or a mentor or a colleague who we can like trust and lean on. So building that support system is a way to combat this. Looking at your time management, you talked about people pleasing. You also talked about the 10,000 things that you used to do when you were running up and down four floors, cleaning a house and taking care of kids and doing this and this. How can we manage our time in a way that's effective where we're not losing time? I have on my website, I have I call it practice energy audit. And in the practice, it's a free, you know, something for anyone who wants to go there, but somaticintegrationinstitute.org. This energy audit helps you look at how you're spending your time during the day and where is my time being wasted? Where am I losing hours, right? Where can I regain time? At the end of it, the first time I put it together and I actually looked at it in my own practice, I gained about 5 hours back. I was like, oh my goodness, that's an hour a day. That's my lunch break every single day. It was a really beautiful practice. So I highly recommend people look at something like that. Are there ways that I can use, you mentioned AI, are there things that I can use that are tools that are out there that can help me? Like, for example, memory aids. How many things do you have stuck in your head right now that you are thinking about needing to do that would be so much easier if it just was like you were reminded of it or someone else reminded you of it, and then you can kind of brain dump and not carry around this extra weight of just like keeping track of things. Like there's so many things, like again, I'm a mom. There's so many things to keep track of. Sometimes it's like overwhelming. I've, you know, baseball and soccer and dance and gymnastics. And then I've got work and meetings and a place to store all of that and have it come back to you, whether it's an AI system or an assistant, huge, right? Minimizing screen time. I know this is, people say this all the time, and it's a lot easier said than done, but unfortunately, we've definitely found that spending time scrolling on, you know, Facebook or Instagram or TikTok or whatever it might be, wherever you're spending your time, it's alleviate the stress that your nervous system is feeling. In fact, it often exacerbates the stress. So at a nervous system level, those visual images and the constant turnover of images and ideas and information can be really mentally and emotionally exhausting. One of the things that I talk with a lot of people I work with about is this idea of like, how do you quiet your mind? How do you intentionally, you know, turn off the noise? Do you go for a walk and listen to a podcast? Like maybe you should go for a walk in the woods, or you could go for a walk in the woods and not listen to a podcast, and you could just listen to the birds, and you could listen to the wind and the little animals scurrying, and really just take in the natural world around you and allow that to settle into your body and settle into your nervous system. It makes a huge difference.
Thank you. Tell us where entrepreneurs can connect with you.
Where can they connect with me? So I'm at somaticintegrationinstitute.org. And for those people listening to this show today, if they go to the somatic, they go to the flourishing practice system.org they can find a ton of resources and supports. I'm going to send you all of this so you can attach it to the show. But yeah, I would love for people to find me. I'm also at Somatic Informed Therapies on Instagram. That's the other place. There's a lot of resources, a lot of information, tips and tricks. And that's probably the best way to find me.
Thank you. Heal Podcast with Lily Patrasco shares longevity and anti-aging techniques to stay young forever, increase energy, overcome addiction, and live your longest best life ever, shared by world's most innovative alternative and traditional health thought leaders, healers, and doctors. Discover quantum healing strategies to heal your mind, body, and soul.